All right, Xbox Live is 5 years old, and today is the actual birthday, and I thought, who better to get on the show than the man himself, Jay Allard.
Hey, thanks, Larry.
Jay, it's great to have you. Need to hold the mic a little closer. Oh, there you go.
All right.
So thanks, man. It's I'm so glad I was able to meet up with you because you're Zune now. You're really busy with Zune. Just launched this week. Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks. It's been a lot of work.
It has been a lot of work, and people are really digging a lot of the new features, the wireless sync, and so on and so forth. But I wanted to get you in here because you know you're the father of Xbox and the father of Xbox Live.
I had a lot of help.
You had a lot of help, but you're really what when people think about Xbox and Xbox Live in the old days 5 years ago, they think Jay. And where's Jay? So hopefully this is going to be a nice little surprise for people to have you kind of look back at the Xbox group.
Yeah, I'm spending all my time on – I'm either working on Zune or I'm still playing Xbox Live.
You are. You're
up there a lot.
You are up there. You have way more gamer score than I do.
Well, that's not saying much.
No, come on.
But I was hoping to get 25,000 in time for the five-year anniversary, but I'm a little short.
Well, you're busy too. I mean you're launching the product. But I want to go back and talk like 5 years ago. You had the – Even before then, you had the vision of putting you and the team, all the folks I interviewed, you know, leading up to this day, had the team of putting the Ethernet port in the back of the original Xbox. That must have been crazy. The crazy conversations around that.
Well, it's interesting that you know you think about what we were doing. We made all those decisions in 1999, and in 1999 we were thinking about putting in the hard drive, and
right.
That was a pretty straightforward debate.
Right.
You know, and that's a $40, you know, cost of goods
right.
Type of decision times 25 million consoles. That's a $1 billion decision.
Right.
To say we're going to put a hard drive in every device. And everybody felt really good about that. We fought probably 10 times as much about whether or not we should go modem or broadband.
Really?
And all the way up the organization, everywhere in the organization, people were thinking that we were slamming the door in the faces of our customers and just going against better business judgment by saying broadband. And, you know, there was a small set of believers, it was me and Cam Ferroni and Jeff Henshaw and some other folks on the team, and we just believed so much in preserving the quality of the experience and insisting on voice in every game. That we said we're going to bet on broadband. And
look what happened.
You know, we were going to turn some people away in 99, 2000, 2001, 2002. So be it.
Right.
And, you know, today over 50% of the consoles sold are connected. So I think it was a good decision at the time. It's a hard one.
I mean, that was crazy. 1999, just to have that's 7, you know, almost 10 years ago, to have that vision to be able to put that Ethernet in the back there when no one was really thinking about that.
Well, you know, it, like I said, it was more of a difficult debate than it was really clairvoyance on anyone's part because we all had broadband experiences on PCs.
Right.
We knew what broadband could bring, and you know that kind of led to the next debate, whether or not we were going to create something that would attract people. And a lot of people said, you know, online gaming's already been done on the PC. It's
right.
Not that special, so this won't be a big differentiator. And, you know, we had a lot of people that didn't really believe in live.
Right.
Some internally. Externally, it was really hard talking to game publishers, and a lot of the game publishers and even developers thought that it was never going to take off in the living room.
Yeah, Scott Henson earlier in the week talked about some of the developer conversations, and it was tough.
Oh, it was. It was. And it was comical, too. I remember a very early conversation with Tim Sweeney. And so there were opposite extremes. Some people were like, you got to put in a modem, and you can't insist on voice in every game. And then I'll never forget talking to Tim. And I think it was early 2000. And Tim came in, and there were a bunch of other developers in the room. We were talking about it. And one developer said, no, you can't insist on voice in every game. And Tim was like, damn it, you got to put the microphone in the controller.
Yeah.
It's so important. It's got to be everywhere. And I don't want you to say you have to buy a headset.
Right.
It's got to go with every box. Voice is so important.
Voice out of the box.
And so we made Tim a controller with a headphone. We literally, I think it might have been Henshaw that ran out of the room, and we got some duct tape, and we got a headphone, a microphone.
Right.
We taped it into the controller, and we
presented
it to him.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
As a gift. I wonder if he still has it.
Now you're famous for many things, but one of the things is you wrote the memo to Bill Gates in the 90s that said the internet's going to be big. So was this obvious to you that the internet was going to be big with gaming?
Well, you're being very flattering, but I think that, you know, in some ways I'm kind of a one-trick pony. You know, I kind of look – you know, when I was in university, when I was a kid growing up and playing with computers, I got my first 110 baud acoustic coupled modem.
Right.
And I discovered that was, the world
so coupled means you had to put the handset on it, for those of you listening, that was acoustic.
Well, yeah, and the handset was independent of the phone itself.
Right.
I mean, this was old days, and there was color TV at the time, but
barely.
But yeah, modems in the late 70s, early 80s were an incredible invention that didn't make its way into home computing environments at all.
Right.
They're, you know, mostly for data centers, data networks, and things like that. And so I had one at home, and it opened my eyes to the potential. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were a very, very small number of enthusiasts out there that were early adopters. And so, you know, I actually met kids from Washington mm-hmm. State in Seattle, mm-hmm. Actually, that I befriended when I was 12 years old living in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was just such an amazing opportunity. And it was one of the key drivers that got me interested in computers and video games and the profession I chased. And it's always just been so clear to me that as incredible as technology is, the potential of what human beings can achieve when they work together,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it's a Halo match,
right.
or, you know, trying to create a new digital media player, or, you know, curing a disease, it's really the human potential that makes things happen. And so I've sort of been one trick pony at Microsoft, you know, hey, if we had this internet thing to Windows,
ding.
You know, a lot of people get together and do some crazy stuff, and some of it will be really, really good.
Right.
And then we did the same thing with games, and, you know, now I'm trying to do the same thing with music.
Well, that's not a bad trick to do, but
well, it's working so far.
Yeah, it is working. You're having a good success with it. Well done. What are some of the surprises over the past 7 years in terms of the gaming that you're like, wow, I never thought people would do that? Is it the pervasiveness of it? Is it the achievements with the 360? Or
I actually thought, you know, I've had a couple of wow moments on Xbox Live, and certainly one of them fits right into that question, which was playing cat and mouse.
Yeah, tell this story.
No, there's like a 13-year-old kid that I was playing PGR 2 with,
right.
who explained to me the rules of cat and mouse.
Why don't you go ahead and explain them for people that don't know?
I'm going to have to try to remember
yeah.
that. So you did was you paired off in teams,
right.
and you'd pick the same color cars, and one of you would be a Mini Cooper,
right.
and the other would be a Ferrari. I guess it was an F50. I think
right.
it was an F50 was the best car in the game at the time. And maybe it was an Enzo. No, the Enzo wasn't out yet. So it was the F50 anyway, and you squared off against other teams, and so another team would couple up, and they would be blue Ferrari and blue Mini Cooper. And the first Mini Cooper across the line in the Nürburgring won.
Won.
And that was it. You know, in the Nürburgring, you'd do like 11-minute races or whatever. And sometimes you'd push the Mini Cooper. Other times you'd take out other people's Mini Coopers. And the guys at Bazaar never, ever expected people to use their game that way.
Right.
You know, there were no achievements built into it. There was no game mode built into it or whatever else. And, you know, here we are. It was a 13-year-old kid in the Midwest
mm-hmm.
teaching me something inside of my favorite game on Xbox and on Live that I had never conceived of before.
Right, right.
You know? And it was a great gameplay mode.
Yeah.
And it spread like wildfire.
Right.
You know, anybody that was into PGR 2 at the time knows exactly what cat and mouse was.
Right. Yeah, oh, yeah, I remember that. And you and I think you and I have played it a couple times with the team. It's definitely – it's interesting to see people get creative. I mean, we see that now with Halo 3 and Forge.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're creating their own destiny, their own game.
I love that aspect of it. It's sort of like, an impromptu, like, jazz jam.
Yeah.
Or instead of, you know, this very, very mercurial concert experience where the set list was picked beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just a couple of guys getting together and having a good time. And it was, you know, part of the play that we wanted to enable with Xbox was always about, you know, sort of that make-believe world that you would create with your friends in the backyard and
mm-hmm.
the games that you would make up. And, you know, the early ad campaigns on 360, the jump in,
mm-hmm.
you know, it wasn't a mistake that we picked, you know, jump roping
right.
or cops and robbers
right.
or the standoff piece or whatever else, because that was what gaming was all about. And it was cool to see. And first for me, it was PGR, and then it's evolved beyond that. Seeing people actually take it and make it not just about achievements or about scores or about headshots
mm-hmm.
or whatever else,
mm-hmm.
but saying, hey, let's just go have fun with this.
Are you, you know, we talked about these funny things that you've come across, but Live has really become this cultural benchmark. You see it on, you know, you see it in movies, people playing over Live, you see it on TV. Is that surprising to you? Or is that like, yeah, you know, we thought about that in 1999?
Well, you know, we made the video. We did this video called Dark Master.
Right, infamous Dark Master.
Remember that? Yeah. Dark day for Dark Master. And so we had hoped that it would become a little bit more pervasive, and actually by yelling at the TV in a manner of speaking, you know, and changing the medium a little bit, it would become a more engaging, less uptight, less solitary experience about slaying the dragon, and a little bit more about, you know, kicking back and having a good laugh. And, you know, I didn't expect that. So we expected that behavior to happen, mm-hmm. but I didn't really expect it to be as mainstream as it was.
Right.
And I remember the, you know, the first Xbox live launch party that we did in L.A., you know, Freddie Prinze Jr. is there, and he won't put the headset down. You know, he wouldn't put the controller down. He wouldn't take the headset off.
Right,
you know, Sam Jackson is there, and he won't put the thing down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just celebrity after celebrity, you know, TV star after TV star, athlete after athlete, producer or director after producer or director. There are all of these people, and, you know, the light bulb that went on for me at that point was – I've spent my whole life believing that there was more to entertainment than just, you know, enjoying their mediums. And all of these people that have entertained us for all of these years that you would consider classic entertainers were having the time of their lives on the thing that we created.
Right.
And that was cool.
Yeah,
that was cool. Like always looking up at Sam Jackson and saying, you know, wow, you know, you're an incredible movie star. I love the films that you're in. You've done so much for entertainment. And then having him flip around and just have a big laugh with a couple of his friends and see something that he had never seen before.
Yeah.
You know, and it became a two-way street. So it's cool.
And being able to enable that. It's been wild. You know, we're up to more than 8 million members now on live. You know, do you remember the first few thousand?
Oh, yeah. I remember the first interviews I did with the press, and the press, like, so, you know, we'd walk them through the data center and explain the plan and tell them all the features and show them a little Revolt, show them a little Mech Assault. and they would say, you know, so what do you expect of this thing? And I say, well, you know, for the, you know, first 3 months, what do you expect? And I'd say, you know, thousands of really happy customers.
Right.
You know, we're not going to measure this thing in the millions anytime soon. It's really just about thousands, tens of thousands of really satisfied customers that are really engaged and would recommend it to a friend.
Right.
And, you know, then we hit a million before TiVo hit a million or AOL hit a million or AT&T hit a million or MTV hit a million.
Right.
I mean, any of these mainstream brands that and services that over the years, HBO, we were at a million faster than that. And that was just amazing. There wasn't really a period of time other than the beta where I remember it being a small community.
Yeah.
Because the day we turned it on,
yeah,
it just
so they
exploded.
Flooded in. Yeah. We talked to Eric, who runs operations, and he said, yeah, they were a little worried about, you know, the numbers just kept going up and up and up, and they were like, uh-oh, we got a hit on our hands.
Yeah, we expected it to be much more of a stair step. And
right.
Instead, it just became this really incredible vertical cliff. And, you know, it's really beat expectations and predictions that we've had internally from a business point of view every quarter.
Yeah.
It's surprised us. Every quarter, every month, the growth rate, and hats off to Eric and the ops team because, you know, when you're looking down the barrel of Halo 2 and saying, how many do you think we're going to add?
Yeah.
You know, they would double it and add a little and then add a little bit more.
And then keep
it. And they were pretty close every time. And
yeah.
They were always ready.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really been amazing. Where do you think it's going to go now for the next few years? I mean, Xbox 360 is sold millions. It's, you know, it's leading the pack now. Where do you think online gaming is going to go? Where do you think live is going to be in a few years?
Well, I think it becomes the norm. You know, there was a period of time in video games where 3D was the exception, not the rule. And you'd look at a game like Virtua Fighter in the arcades, and you'd say, wow, that's 3D. And it would catch your attention, and you'd put more quarters in it maybe than the other machines, and there would be a bigger line around it because it was unique and sort of bleeding edge. But now you go into an arcade, you can't find a 2D game,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's what's going to happen, and we've already seen it largely happen with consoles, where all of the games are online, and when it's offline, you feel disconnected.
And how?
And so I think what hasn't happened, though, is, you know, Virtua Fighter is a good example. Did Virtua Fighter really change the fighting game mechanic? Not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mostly it was a visual thing. And so right now, have we really changed the way people play football?
Right.
On a game console?
Not really.
Not totally. What we've done is we've made a virtual couch, and now you can play the same, have the same kind of Madden experience, but now over a network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's next up for Madden? I get pretty excited thinking about redefining football and integrating fantasy leagues and integrating and being able to connect to some kind of persistent world outside of the living room experience, whether it's on a cell phone or a laptop computer or a web browser, and being able to stay connected to that. You still want the high impact action moments in the living room, but I think we can, you know, now that the medium of online is dependable and people know it's here to stay, now people will start doing breakthrough things with it. And, you know, the Bungie guys are a great example of guys that do breakthrough things. And the WoW guys, Worlds of Warcraft guys have done breakthrough things. I think you're going to see more leadership like that, that redefines, you know, Worlds of Warcraft isn't an RPG.
Right.
You know, Bungie's not a first person, you know, Halo 3 is not a first person shooter.
Right.
They've redefined that category. I think there's room in a lot of the categories of games that we play to do that still.
Do you think that so now you're working on Zune right now. A lot of people email me, you know, you're online every day with your gamertag Hero Protagonist. Tell the story behind that, because a lot of people don't know.
Oh, he's the he was the prime character in a great book that I really enjoyed called Snow Crash.
Right.
And Snow Crash was a story written by Neal Stephenson. I think it was in 1990 or 1991, same time I joined Microsoft. And it told the story of a world called the Metaverse, which was a 3D online persistent universe before anybody knew what an MMO was.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Worlds of Warcraft wasn't even a dream yet. And it was the first piece of literature that I read, and it happened to be a work of fiction. But it was the first piece of literature I read where I said, this guy really gets it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I saw the same kind of future unfolding that he did. And I basically joined Microsoft to build the metaverse.
Right.
You know, the first time I met Neil and talked to him about it, like in 93, I talked to him about it. And he said, so what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm at Microsoft building the metaverse. And he's like, really?
His head must have spun around.
Yeah, he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I didn't know they had a metaverse team. I'm like, well, actually, no. You know, I work on the TCP/IP networking stack in Windows NT. He's like, well, that's a start.
Exactly.
You know, you needed the dial tone first,
right?
And so I've just been kind of progressively working my way up that food chain to light that kind of thing up. And, you know, Hero was the chief protagonist in the story. So. Mm-hmm. I grabbed it, and there's no space because of the 15-character limit.
Right, exactly. It's just here, one word.
Just fit.
So people must send you messages all the time. Jay, come back to Xbox. Do you get those a lot over live?
Yeah, I get those a ton between PMs and you know, messages on the service. My mailbox is always cluttered, but which is cool. It's cool to stay connected. And, you know, what people don't know, while officially most of my time is really – focused on Zune now, I spent a ton of time with the product. I spent a ton of time with the product group and the folks over there on the product team. You know, I'm no stranger to you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm over here now.
Meet with this week, you know, Mark Witt, Ben Kilgore,
all the guys.
And, Scott Henson was over in the building last week. And
right.
So a lot of the folks, we actually have, I have a great relationship with a lot of the folks driving the team, guys in hardware like Todd and Leo and Harjeet. That are all still over there. So we keep the connection, and I think there's, you know, a lot of connection and potential between some of the ideas and some of the things that we're doing with Zune and Xbox.
Yeah, that's what people keep wanting. They're like, hey, I just want to be able to buy my movie on the Xbox Live Marketplace and play it on Zune, and, you know, all those things.
That's a good idea. good thing that you know, Eric's team is the team that's running the operations center, you know, for all of that. And, you know, the architecture that guys like Boyd and Tony Chen and, you know, Mark V, who's back on the Xbox team now, you know, the guys that established the original architecture really took a 10-year view.
Right.
And we built the Zune marketplace on the same tech.
Yeah.
You know, so the same points carry across, the same idea. You know, we call them Zune tags instead of gamer tags.
Yep.
And we have these Zune cards instead of gamer cards, which are a little bit different. And have a couple of different features, but it's all built on the same tech.
Yeah.
And so because of that, we'll be able to enable scenarios like the one you described with, hey, I want to get my movie.
Right.
But other things too, like, hey, I want to meet people that are into the same kind of music and games I'm into.
Before I let you go, I want to talk to you about the fact that, you know, when you launched Xbox, you were up against Sony, which had the PS2, which sold, you know, millions of units, and you're behind. Now you're launching Zune. This is the second year, and you're, you know, people always can make the comparison to the iPod killer. What's it like to be the underdog?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I kind of made a career of it, I guess, at Microsoft, because before that it was Novell. Before that, you know, after Novell, it was Netscape.
Right.
You know, and we were a lot of the technology that I've been involved in, the categories I've been in, into really, in a way, we're underdogs on one hand, and on the other hand, and that's kind of fun. It's motivating for the team. It's cheap motivation for the team to have somebody that's so far ahead of you and that has such a great reputation. Right. Sony PlayStation had an amazing reputation, and people thought we were nuts to jump into that category, not only because we had never done anything like it before, but also because Sony was such a venerable brand, and, and people really liked the product. And the same holds true in the iPod category. But, you know, there's really two sides to that coin. On one hand, it is the side of starting, you know, starting late in a category. On the other hand, it's breaking new ground for the company and doing things and really challenging our comfort zone and our limits as a company to go do this. You know, we had never sold a product direct to Walmart via Walmart in 1999 when we conceived of Xbox.
Yeah.
You know, we launched Zune and we're in 31,000 stores on day zero.
Right.
Wow.
That's amazing. Yeah.
You know, and that's 5 short years.
Right.
You know, 5 or 6 short years between those two. So I think, you know, I get a lot of satisfaction out of developing those new muscles and bringing those new skills and those new people. You know, the people that we have that are working on Xbox now are just phenomenal talent that we never had in the company before. We have this whole new culture. And on Zune, we've brought in, we have more people from the music industry and more artists on the team themselves than were ever attracted to Microsoft before. So I really enjoy expanding the culture, expanding the horizons of the company, and building these new assets that we can connect together, because just like I think the future of video gaming is going to change materially, I think the future of the music industry is going to change materially.
Even more so than the past 5 years?
Oh, music industry?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be absolutely crazy.
Because I got out of working in the music industry 7 years ago when I came to Microsoft, and it was falling apart then.
Well, be careful, though. I think you have to be careful with language. The thing that's screwed up and in trouble in the music industry, it's not the music industry, it's the record industry.
Correct.
And so if you turn the clock back and you say, well, you couldn't get studio time, and you couldn't get aired on the radio, and you couldn't get assorted at Kmart.
Right.
And so as an artist, you would go to a label and you'd say, I need all of those things. I want to get my music out there. And the primary way you made money was selling records. That is completely upside down now.
Right.
You don't need a studio anymore because every computer is a studio. You don't need promotion and distribution. You don't need the radio because you have internet radio. You can get your music out there. You can get your name out there. You can get your band and your brand out there trivially now. And you can go to CD Baby and you can get your CDs on store shelves without the help of a big record label,
right,
in ways that you never could before. And so they're we're really changing the conversation, the whole music industry now, where the record labels are really thinking about what services should, you know, back in the day, they were offering that set of services to the artist. That set of services, it's still relevant, but it's not the important thing.
Less
the important
so.
Thing is, I want to get into that new Cadillac commercial, or I want to, you know, I want to perform at the Super Bowl, or I want a reality TV show, or I want to collaborate with this fashion designer and do a fashion line, or I want to go and do this kind of stadium tour with these other artists and really create this multimedia experience, or, you know, or I want to do you know, microblogging from the tour bus,
right,
and that kind of thing. And so we've got this incredible opportunity where there's this collision of, you know, business, art, and technology. And musicians don't think about music, they think of themselves as artists more broadly. The technology of both the, you know, the internet, these very small devices, and distribution is changing the game, and the business is under incredible pressure. And so I think, you know, in a lot of ways, the period of time that we're in very broadly is this digital entertainment renaissance. And so there's all this experimentation, and, you know, just like the Renaissance of Days Yore, there's no such thing as a mathematician. There's a guy that was pretty good at numbers, but he turned out to be a philosopher too. You know, and the best scientists were also the best painters. You know, and everybody was exploring and breaking new ground. That's what's happening in entertainment. You know, the status quo just doesn't work. And so I think the game industry is reinventing itself. I think television is reinventing itself. The music industry certainly is. And the filmed entertainment industry is as well.
They're being dragged along.
you know, some people are being dragged along kicking and screaming, and other people are just, you know, breaking new ground.
Yeah.
You know, the Wachowski brothers, what was it, 4 years ago in The Matrix?
The Matrix.
They did the Animatrix. They did the comic book. You know, they did the DVD before the movie came out. They did the movie. They did the comic book. They worked with Dave Perry, and they created the video game on site and did motion capture while they were filming and filmed extras for the video game. And they conceived of the entire property as this polymorphic entertainment experience. You know, there's manga, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. That's going to be a big part of the future. And so there are some people that are kicking and screaming. You know, there are dinosaurs in the industry, but they're also pioneers. And, you know, you take, you know, guys like Rodriguez or Quentin Tarantino or Wachowski brothers or so on, you know, they don't think about one medium anymore.
What do you, I'm gonna let you go, but I want to ask, tell me, what's your thoughts on DRM?
Well,
you know, music DRM. This is way off in left field, but...
Yeah, I guess it is or it isn't. The first thing you got to say is you got to believe in IP.
Right.
I mean, the amount of I actually think of the sweat equity more than the financial equity. Whether you're building a film or you're recording an album or you're making a game or, you know, you're writing a book or publishing a magazine, the amount of energy that goes into that and amount of time and amount of care that goes into a high-quality product, the people that produce that deserve to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to believe in the value of intellectual property. Mm-hmm. You know, at Microsoft, you got to believe it as well for the software industry. And, you know, so you say the music industry is in trouble today. Software industry is, you know, it's just the next shoe to drop in some way. So
right.
I think the IP really matters. Unfortunately, the word, the whole idea of DRM has gotten in some ways a bad shake because people's perception has been that it's been about control.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want to be controlled. They want the freedom to their music wherever they go. And so unfortunately, the DRM systems and all of the different components in the ecosystem don't – the only standard for music is MP3
mm-hmm.
that lets you take the music anywhere you want to go. Between MP3 and CDs, you can listen to music wherever you want. And so the DRM systems haven't been scalable enough to enable that for something that you, quote, own. And what's worse is that the CDs that you buy are DRM-free.
Mm-hmm.
So going and saying, come and buy something that's more restricted than the thing I was selling you last week, and it doesn't have liner notes, and it doesn't have album art, and it doesn't have a physical case, and it doesn't work with your car right away, and if you want to sell it for $4 and buy a burrito, you can't do that either.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I'm going to put this, you know, this protective scheme around it that's not going to let you do as much as you could mm-hmm. with the zeros and ones I sold you last time. I'm going to charge you the same price.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough proposition.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that the MP3 thing is the way to enable that choice and the compatibility. And that the industry collectively didn't get ahead of it fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it has to be that way, you know, and I think that DRM certainly has a place. We don't talk about DRM with Xbox Live.
Right.
But it's there.
Right.
You know, but we solve the problem the way the customer wants. You know,
right.
You buy Pac-Man Championship Edition, you go over to Kilgore's house and you plug in your MU,
right.
Your rights go with you.
Right.
Isn't that the way it should work?
Right, when you're connected to Live, yeah.
If your kid's sister wants to play it on your Xbox, well, we left a copy behind for her.
Right.
But it can't be copied infinitely.
Right.
There are two workable active copies at most
right.
at any time. And that works for our partners, that works for our customers, that works for us.
Right.
And it works seamlessly and you never have to think about it.
Yeah.
That's what we've got to do when you do impose those types of controls. And, you know, you don't want it to be more restrictive from a compatibility and an interop point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to solve that. And, you know, a great application of DRM where, again, you don't think about DRM and you're really excited by what gets unlocked is ZunePass.
Mm-hmm.
So for the price of one CD a month, you get access to the world's music library legitimately.
Right.
And you can download as much as you want. You get turned on to new artists, you know, and people love that. Anybody that's got a Zune Pass that I've talked to says, I just absolutely love that. I got five features that I want in it, but I love it.
Right.
That's the best way to consume music. Why would I buy songs? Why would I buy albums?
Right.
Subscribing is I don't think about buying MTV and ESPN and HBO. I subscribe.
Right.
It's called my cable bill.
Right.
Give me a music bill and, you know, give me the diversity of programming that I want. And I love it. I just need it to be more compatible in more places. Give me a better car solution, Microsoft. So that's what we've got to solve. And without DRM, you could never sit down with the artists and the people that represent them and say, hey, let's just give 3 million tracks to people for $15 a month.
Yeah, that's a short conversation.
Yeah. So DRM has its place, and I think you know the onus is on the people that create the experiences to use it in a way that customers get you know great experiences, and it can unlock experiences like that Zune Pass that were never enabled before, and that's what we have to focus on rather than using it to control or restrict.
A lot of the stuff that's in that you just launched with the Zune this week is really exciting. You talked about the Zune card, and I can see what you know music I've played to. That's really exciting. I mean, that people look at that and they can really go, oh, that's just like Xbox Live. I mean, clearly that was no mistake.
No, there's no mistake. And it's a little bit different because, you know, Xbox has been and something that I think we have to evolve beyond is it's been hyper-competitive.
Right.
You know, where our focus was on leaderboards and achievements and gamer score, and that works for a class of people. It doesn't work for everybody. And in the music space, I don't want to compete with somebody in the music space,
yeah.
a music listener. Yeah. So, you know, an interesting thing that we've done in the Zune card is actually have more depth in terms of the history of things that you've done. So we do two things. We let you select and promote your favorite songs of all time, some ways a soundtrack of your life.
Right.
And then we also automatically capture and populate on your card sort of the soundtrack of your day,
right.
the last 10 things that you played. And so, you know, then you can go and you can put that on, you know, majornelson.com.
Right.
And people can see what you're listening to.
Which
and
is going to be scary, but that's all.
It's going to be scary in a number of different ways. I think it's a great social experiment.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, Larry becomes a record store.
Right.
In some ways, Larry becomes a DJ. And for people that, you know, connect with your sensibilities and everything, it's a great way for them to get recommendations and find things that they wouldn't normally find.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find with music, unlike games, where games, a lot of people rely on reviews. A lot of people rely on online recommendations and, you know, these sites that they trust. Music, people more often than not trust people they know.
Okay.
They don't read the charts.
Right.
They don't read the reviews. They trust people they know and they say, oh, you're a Chemical Brothers fan? I'm kind of bored. You know, what should I be listening to?
Right.
And they get turned on to something new from somebody that they trust. And so I think there's a cool social dynamic that we're going to unleash with this Zune social thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I can't wait to see what, you know, I'm going to go take a look at your Zune card when we're done to see what you're listening to see, because that's what that interests me to kind of go through my friends list and see what people are listening to. And I think you're onto something.
Well, it's also cool. I mean, as a guy that spends a lot of time blogging, it's a lot of work.
And yeah.
People probably don't actually understand how much work it is,
right.
especially for a celebrity blog
oh, please.
Type of thing. Well, I mean, just the volume of input you get. How
right.
many blogs you go to are zero comments.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't go to your blog and see anything that's got less than 100.
Right.
And how many of them are directed, you know, direct emails to you?
Right.
I don't envy your inbox at all. But it's so much work to keep these things up to date. And so Chris Stevenson, who runs marketing for Zune, and I were talking on the Zune announcement day, and we were going to put a Zune card in one of our blogs mm-hmm. to show to the press. And we kind of looked at each other and were like, well, we'll use yours.
Yeah.
And neither of us had updated blogs that we maintained for 3 or 4 months because we've been so busy with Zune.
Right.
And the cool thing about Zune cards are it's a blog that maintains itself.
Right.
It's a musical blog, but all right. you have to do is go for a run and listen to a couple tracks in your Zune, come home, stick it in the speaker dock.
And you're done.
And you're done.
Yeah.
There's new stuff about Larry that's published on the internet
on
your behalf. So it can keep your page fresh. And so I think there's some magic in that idea and that we should probably lift off of, you know, in terms of Xbox. But I think other people in social nets will try to figure this out, which is, you know, How do I basically create some more of these feed-like things
right.
that keep you know my page, my blog, my identity, my personality current with less effort than sitting down and saying I went to the Z Trip show last night.
Right.
Let me tell you what it's about. Let me type in the set list.
That's kind of I wanted to ask you about this because this is you and I have grown up in a similar era. Some of the people that are listening to this are a little bit younger. The what's going on nowadays is the hive mentality. Where we all know what everyone's doing. You and I grew up in a different era when that really wasn't the case. It was really more proactive as opposed to passive. And just exactly what you're describing is this passive hive mentality where I'm just doing my things and it's just automatically being recorded.
Right.
And it's very interesting.
All right, I think the privacy implications. I
mean, yeah.
You know, a couple of things are happening in the media now that are just blowing up. You know, the situation over in Italy with the murder and
yep.
the friend of a friend on MySpace,
yeah.
you know, is now being picked up. And, you know, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I think there are going to be a couple of situations in the next months or
right.
few years that are going to give everybody a little bit of pause about how comfortable they feel about putting their life on the right. line like that.
Right.
I'm amazed going to Facebook and MySpace and looking at what that younger generation is willing to put out there about themselves.
Right.
You know,
it's kind of scary.
Are there any presidential candidates left of that generation?
Yeah.
That's a point. Lot of incriminating photos.
Yeah, it's weird because we had this discussion over on our team. Was like, okay, so I've got a Facebook account. I really kind of – the people that I work with, I kind of want them to know a little bit of information about me, different information than the people I kind of party with.
Yeah.
It's really – you know, I don't want Jay Allard knowing what I did on a Saturday. Probably not. Maybe. I don't know. But it's really kind of – it's different to see how things are going to evolve. But you've got the – in the back to the Zoom card, you've got kind of privacy controls in there. So you can say, I don't want to show it at all.
Well, you know, and kind of coming full circle, we had some really long debates about whether or not your gamer tag should be an email address.
Right.
And there was a constituency – I mean, actually, the majority thought that it should just be your email address.
Right.
And that, you know, when you're in PGR and you met up with somebody
right.
that you didn't know, right. they – would then have your email address.
Right, major@xbox.com.
And I was a jerk about that. I was
yeah.
like, no way.
Yeah.
We need a layer of removal. You can always share your email address, but
right.
if we put it out there,
right.
people aren't going to be comfortable with that. And
yeah.
so I actually have some comfort. You know, everybody knows what my gamer tag is.
Right.
So I can't really escape it. But they also can't fill my inbox.
Right.
And they can't send me IMs.
Right.
And they can't go to my Facebook account.
Right.
Because, you know, because I'm an Xbox Live gamer.
Right.
You know, so I actually like that one level of indirection.
Right.
And, you know, I've got my mountain biking friends and I've got my Xbox friends.
Right.
I've got my Zoom friends.
Right.
I've got the people that I work with and, you know, I've got 800 contacts in my cell phone and I would not put them all in one folder.
Right.
You know?
They're different. It's all contextual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to share different things to those different folks.
Yeah.
And so we kind of erred on the side of caution in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we got 8 million plus members out there that feel pretty good about that. And you don't hear a lot of concern about that.
Yeah.
Whereas in Facebook, I think there's more of a concern about, yeah, everybody gets to see everything about me.
Right.
Not really comfortable.
Yeah, with everything.
You know, if anything, on Xbox, people want to find ways to share more.
Yeah, I'm going to let you go.
With Uno, they did.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm going to let you go, but I want to. I'm so thrilled just to be able to spend some time with you. I'm glad. I appreciate you coming on and celebrating the 5 years of live with me, and with the listeners as well. What are you playing right now?
What am I playing right now?
Yeah,
I'm playing E4.
Uh huh.
And it's just mind blowing.
Right.
That's a really really interesting game. I love the stuff that the Q guys do. What else am I playing? Playing Katamari.
Of course. Did you play Portal?
I have not played Portal yet.
You must.
No, I've got like 5 messages in my queue right now. Must play Portal.
Yeah.
Kilgore, I think, has sent me 3 of them.
I got him hooked onto it.
Yeah.
Paul Bunyan, I got him hooked onto that. I mean, he's like, why? And then he messaged me. He's like, okay, now I get it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been coming up on launch and I either need a cheap way to get to 25,000 or I need some time.
You know? So what do you at now? So
Katamari is the last thing I've been playing and E4 has been something.
Did you finish BioShock?
You know, I put it down because I was playing it when Halo came out.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And so I got – and I screwed up because I killed the guy before – you know, after you do the paintings.
Right.
I don't want to spoil anything.
Right, right. I know what you're talking about.
The whole painting scene. And I killed the guy before
right.
he let me get the tonic. And so
– I played it again.
Did you?
Just to
get through that.
Yeah. Exactly. I did the same exact thing.
That's a phenomenal game.
Oh,
I mean, to call that a shooter would be
– it's not doing it justice.
Yeah.
No.
It felt a lot like I loved when I first played Condemned.
Yeah.
I really loved what they did in terms of the mood and the setting. And it was like a real creepy movie set.
Yeah.
And loved that. And it was sort of kind of felt that way with Resident Evil, but didn't have the gameplay. It didn't feel like I was in control.
Right.
And so I loved that about Condemned when it first came out. But BioShock brought the story.
Right.
And it was like this great mashup of amazing tech, amazing visuals, amazing story.
Atmosphere. Environment, yeah.
Yeah, the right amount of action, you know, and everything. It really balanced it well.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I don't know what the sales numbers have been. I actually have been meaning to go up and take a look because I think that game got really underrated.
Yeah.
I know some of the reviews were very flattering
yeah.
of it, but
it's one of the highest rated games on Xbox. We've got the Orange Box, Halo 3, Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to be one you got to be excited about. Oh, did you like Coder?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is I was up at BioWare last week and those guys are just phenomenal in this game that really looks great.
Oh, the good doctors.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, but now that you're in Zune, you're doing a lot of music stuff. Do you play guitar here? Are you looking forward to Rock Band?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I actually probably have damaged my thumb playing Guitar Hero. I can't play expert.
right.
with the dam. I got like halfway through hard, and that's right. about it.
You just gave up.
But, you know, it's one of the things that we play in the hallway quite a bit.
Right.
And, you know, Jim Vu is making wireless guitars. If...
exactly.
He's too valuable to keep on the team, so nobody placed orders with him because I think he could have a really good side business there.
So, anyway, Jay, I appreciate you taking the time. I'll let you go because congratulations on the Zune launch.
Thanks. Congrats to everybody that has made 5 years of Xbox Live what it was.
Yeah.
You know? To think that in 99 people thought maybe we should just make it a modem thing and maybe we should just have game developers do whatever they want. And maybe
we've seen what happens
email
when
email addresses
right.
and, you know, maybe people should run their own servers and,
right.
you know, maybe it's just a little checkbox feature.
Yeah.
If any of those things had come true, then we wouldn't be where we are today.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is the community has just been great.
Yeah.
Whether it's the guys in the community developer network and what they've done.
Right.
You know, 360 Achievements or 360 Voice. Or
those are some good stuff, isn't it?
It's great stuff. You know, it's just mind-blowing. We'd never conceived of that. I hope we open up more APIs and more data for them to do things. But the community is what makes Live.
Yeah.
You know, we just kind of set up the stage and build the bleachers and, you know, hook up the PA system.
Step back in there. And there's the party.
And it's up to the community. And, you know, the community has done a couple of questionable things. And, you know, from, you know, now and then. But mostly it's just been a totally positive vibe.
Yeah.
It's fun to be part of it. You know, it's got to be what it's like for a rock band to be playing a sold-out stadium.
Yeah.
And getting the energy back from the crowd. You know, we kind of set it up and the crowd's just giving it back.
And you're getting some of the same electricity back from the Zune crowd as well.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, I hope so. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. You know, the first release we had about 6 months to do.
Right.
And this release we put in 12 months on the calendar, but it's been a lot of seven day weeks.
Well, I actually have a special Zune feed now that you have bought. Thank you, Friday Podcasting Support, by the way.
Hey, it's just for you. It's just for you, man.
But thank you for adding that. I have a special feed available. People can download the show and subscribe in their Zune now. So, but cool. Anyway. Again, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate your time, and I'll have you on again, maybe.
All right, absolutely.
I think this is the first time I've ever had you on.
Nah.
I think so.
Nah, really?
I think
on
so.
A podcast, maybe.
So, you've been busy.
Well, you know, we'll talk again when you catch me on Gamerscore.
All right, touche. All right, talk to you later.
All right, thanks, Larry.